I chose the 88th Psalm. And you're going to say to me, gee, how gloomy and dark can you get? The 88th Psalm is unique for a variety of reasons and at the same time common to others, and I will explain. There are several Mizmorei Tehillim that describe a person going through illness, physical, mental, and going through terrific struggles, physical, mental, coming out of them, going through the sense of loneliness, of isolation, of being despised by people. Because we know that there's sometimes nothing more lonely than being sick. As I said, there are several such, and we've learned a few of them. The sixth, the 30th, which we say on Chanukah, Mizmor Shir Chanukah Tabayit LeDavid, describes the sense of having come very close to death, bargaining with God, the dead will not praise you, what's the point of it? That is the common. And in that sense, the 88th Psalm is not different. What makes it completely unique is that it is the only one that begins and ends on a dark, depressed tone. And there is no flipping at the end where salvation comes or healing comes. It's not there. It's not there at all. And in that sense, it's a very, very depressing and depressed mizmor. And as I told you, this is the way it is usually seen, and this is the way it's usually read. Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch takes a completely different tack, and I don't think he is pulling things out of the pshat. I think he is studying it carefully, and he suddenly sees the light, if you like, within the darkness. And he sees it inside here, and I'm going to try to highlight that as well. Okay? Without sugarcoating the emotions that are here. I think that they need to be addressed. I think that they are something that is critical on a personal level and on a collective level. And I'll deal with that in a second. What also makes this unique is the number of introductory koteret they have. Shir Mizmor Livnei Korach. Lamnatzeach al machalat la'anot, maskil leheiman ha'ezrachi. Hello, enough. We've had maskil before, we've had shir mizmor livnei korach before, we've had lamnatzeach before, we've even had the word machalat before. Because is it machalat from mashon machol, dancing, or machalat from the word sickness? And then the strange thing is, machalat is a nismach. It means the sickness of, but there's no word attached to it. La'anot is another major problem, because the word la'anot can mean answer, respond. When we speak about kol anut, as when the Jews were standing in front of the golden calf and dancing, it says that Moshe Rabbeinu heard kol anut, and the Parshanim there say, raised voice. They were singing, they were dancing, and it implies some sort of revelry, perhaps. However, ani, a poor man, comes from the same shoresh. La'anot can mean to torture, to oppress. Inuyim means sufferings, but it also means torture. So which of those does it mean here? And what is the concept here altogether? Is it a song to be sung? Well, we already said Shir Mizmor. Raise your voice. Why would you put the word machalat beforehand? Finally, who are these Bnei Korach, and amongst them, who is Haman, and then finally, who is Ezrachi? So we get two conflicting positions in the Kadmonim. I'm talking about Rishonim, between Rashi and Radak. Two schools. One says this was composed by the descendants of Korach, meant for, given over to the singer or the musician, Haman HaEzrachi. Others say exactly verkehrt. Haman HaEzrachi, whoever he was, and he's mentioned, there's a Haman mentioned in Divrei HaYamim, but we don't know anything else. And if the word Ezrachi can mean that he comes from the descendants of Zerach, which were the children of Peretz and Zerach of Tamar, or Ezrach means a citizen, I don't know what this is. So some say Haman HaEzrachi is the composer, in other words, the writer of the poem, handed over to create music to Bnei Korach, and the conductor is being told to sing it according to the melody of something called Machalat La'anot, as if they know. Frankly, Radak tells us, I've already reiterated over and over again that we don't understand the meaning of these words. And in your, were it not for the actual theme of when you go inside and learn it, you would not have even thought that the word la'anot may mean torture. But the Radak does tell us, this was composed about Jews in Golus and using the suffering of a person who is in isolation, either imprisoned in a dungeon alone in the darkness or imprisoned in his dark illness within physical or, more importantly, mental pain, when you may as well be in a dark dungeon and you see no light and you cannot open the door for yourself to get out of it. And he says that it is using this as a metaphor for the state of an oppressed people. Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says, there is no greater, better, more appropriate description of ghettoized life, of living amongst people who despise you, who force you into isolation, who slam the door shut on you. And he too looks at it as a metaphor for, from the individual towards the nation, and describes this. What makes this so incredible is that Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch is living at the time when Jews in Germany have been emancipated. They now are full citizens. They've gone into headlong rush, deliberate assimilation, when they have reformed Judaism so that it looks much closer to the Lutheran Church, which is the predominant religion, when they have rallied around the cry of be a Jew in your home and a citizen on the outside. That was the cry. And he became the stalwart guardian of that little flame to keep us Jewish. So what did he know about ghettos? Because there were no ghettos where he was living. And yet he describes beautifully, almost with a prescient, if you like, Ruach HaKodesh, the state of affairs that would occur just a few years later. But he wasn't pretending to be describing something that will happen. He was describing quite accurately, interestingly, the state of affairs in Eastern Europe, where they were now you need to understand, he's alive in the 20s. Jews in Poland have been given the vote. They have representation in the parliament. They've been admitted into the universities. Oh, granted, the grad student unions would harass the students, wouldn't sit with them in the great academies of Warsaw, of Krakow, of Lublin. With having gotten the vote, those that made it into the university or made it into the gymnasia were forced to sit on separate benches. I need you to comprehend this, you know, to understand a little bit. This is already with the liberation, you understand? And he's describing instead the Jew of the shtetl. But are there walls around the shtetl at that point? Are there gates that are preventing him from going out? Well, they may not be physical gates. They were put up much later, of course, 1939, 1940. But there are gates. And we may delude ourselves that there are no gates. There are gates. There are gates and fences around us for those who choose to live as Jews, and even for those who choose to deny that they're Jews when they go out on the outside, it will come back and bite us, and it will do so again. And therefore, it needed to be learned, if nothing else. It begins, by the way, and you'll see that when I took the translation from JPS, their translation skips it, because again, it's not translatable. Okay, so it went directly, and it indicates that that's the first verse, when it isn't. It's actually verse 2, but that's nonsense, you understand, because we know that, this is actually the first verse of the poem itself. Hashem Elokei Yeshuati. Whoever is writing this is addressing God, and he is the God of my salvation. In other words, I see him not as a distant God, but a God that will reach out into history and save me, or into my private life and save me from my illness, will heal me. I see him as active in my life. So whatever it is about this individual, and this is what Rav Shimshon Lefayel immediately points out, he says it opens up by referring to him as Yudkei Vavkei, as Midas HaRachamim, but at the same time, Elokei Yeshuati, because the word Elokim implies the strength, the power, the force of my salvation. Yom Tza'akti. Now, there's something very strange about the way this is written. And the translation that I gave you, at least, is true to it. It doesn't say, I cried in the day, or on the day that I cried. It doesn't say that. It says, I cried day. Do you see that the prepositions are missing? Balayla negdecha. And night, opposite you, before you, looking at you, confronting you. Now, in our minds, what we automatically do is we say, I have cried day and night to you. But if you look carefully, I put a comma in lieu of the te'amim that are there between the word yom tza'akti and balayla negdecha, because there is no preposition for the word yom, but there is a preposition for the word Laila. It says, day I have cried. Not in the day, not during the day. And then it says, in the night, opposite you. But there is no verb. So our tendency is to take the verb that was in the first clause and put it on the other. And that's the way most of the translations and most of the interpretations do this. Along comes Rabbi Shimshon Refael Hirsch and says, please read carefully and look carefully at the Masoretic punctuation. And notice something interesting. I scream by day. There is no scream at night. At night I am with you. Almost as if one would say, whatever is happening by day at least ends by night. Now, I told you, most translations see it as I scream both by day and by night. And why is it opposite you? Because I have nobody else to scream to. I'm calling you, because in the issues of Emtzeredin, I'm calling out and screaming to the walls, as it were. He then goes on, Tavor lefanecha tfilati, may my prayer come before you. Hate oznecha lerinati. Turn your ear, listen quietly to my rina. And Rabbi Shimshon Refael Hirsch, again, refusing to simply say, this is just repeating the same words over again, says there's a subtle difference between the word fila and rina, and we all know it from Slichas. Lishmoa el hatfila ve'el ha rina. He says, sometimes the word rina, which always means, he says, an expression of feeling, he says, when it stands alone, we could say, lechun ranena lehashem, nariya letzur yishein, right at the beginning of Kabbalat Shabbat, and it's clearly joyous, and it's clearly, let us all sing, and that's what it is. Otherwise, we hear, Komi Roni Balaila, get up and sing in the night. And that's usually when nobody else will hear you. Because it says, listen carefully, this Rina is a cry from the heart. It may be a melody of the most sad form, but one needs to really listen because it's quite silent. So the prayer is out loud. The scream by day is out loud. At night, it's just me and you, God, with a very silent melody, maybe one that one barely hums to oneself, or maybe doesn't even hum but hears it in his head. And only a God who can turn and hear what's in your heart hears that rina. Why? Ki sav'a bera'ot nafshi. My soul is satiated. It's fed up with evils. Plural evils. By the way, interesting, in English we only usually say one. It's evil and that's the end of it. You understand? But believe it or not, there are multiple forms of evil. V'chayai lishe'ol higiyu. And my life has reached. And they translate this to the grave, to the pit. In other words, I have reached the point of no return. It is as close as I can to the nadir, the lowest point of all. Necheshavti im yodei bo. I have been thought of as somebody ready to be put into the pit. In other words, I'm as good as dead. My heart hasn't given out and I might be breathing, but if you look at me, I'm a hair's breadth away from dying. Hayiti kegever ein eyal. I am like a man who has no potency, no strength. He's impotent, unable, can't. Someone who can do nothing anymore. Bameitim, I am among the dead. Now, on the surface, if you think of a person in a concentration camp, walking around as a Muslim, close to dead and surrounded by corpses, among the dead, bameitim, chofshi kemo chalalim, free like the corpses. You see, they're free already. Why are they free already? No pain. The pain is over. This man is being tortured. He's free from mitzvahs, that's true. Free from obligations. Free from... nobody could hurt him anymore. That's essentially what it means. Shochvei kever, those who lie in their graves. Ashalos chaltam od, whom you no longer remember. Because it seems that as long as I'm still remembered, what am I done? They still remember me. They call me out for more torture, for more interrogation, for more abuse. But if I'm forgotten, at least I'm not suffering. Vehema miyadcha nigzaru. And they have been cut off from your hand. Because he views his suffering as having, to some degree, come from God's hand. Now, one can only understand this if one learns the book of Iyov. Or, in certain places, Yirmiyahu. Where he says, you crash your hand against me over and over and over. So this person is being tortured by somebody. He talks to God, and yet at the same time he recognizes that whatever happens to him may be actually coming from God. So on the one hand, what is he praying for? The end of life? Or is he actually praying for, get me out of this, I still want to live. I want to end my pain. I want to end the torture. I placed a division between the sixth and the seventh verse because this section here no longer simply describes his state, which could be said to anyone. It is now written, said directly, speaking directly to God Himself. Shatani bebo tachtiyot. You have placed me in the nethermost pit. I am the lowest of the low. Bamachshachim, in the darkness. But notice, machshach is singular. Machshachim, in the darknesses. In other words, in the darkest of the darknesses. Bamtsulot. Mitsula is a measure of depth in the sea. You know that as you go lower and lower and lower in the sea, there is no light. Right? Light no longer reaches there. So in the one hand, we use the word bo, you're thinking of earth. Next thing you're thinking of is seas. Alai samcha chamatecha. Your rage has leaned on me. He sees all of this pressing down on me. V'chol mishberecha inita sella. All of your mishbarim. Now, lishbor means to break. Mishberecha are breakers. They are waves that come crashing against rocks. They are strong enough to actually break rocks and crush them. That's what a breaker is, okay? So it's a wave. Since he already began to use the image of water, depths of water, he's now being awashed with almost a Sisyphean figure, right? From the myth of Sisyphus. Torture, torture, tortured again and again and again. Okay? But now comes the word inita. When the word ana, ayin nun he, is conjugated in piel, inita, it does not mean anita, you answered. Inita means tortured. Anybody who has suffered from despair would have felt the same thing. So the question is, does the word inita mean whom? Kol mishberecha inita. Inita et mi. Who is the object of inita? Who was tortured? Who was oppressed? Who was pressed down? Most of the Mefarshim say the word alai, that is, the implication is it's me. And the way it should be written, if you filled in the prepositions that would be missing, Bechol mishberecha inita oti. With all of your breakers, you have tortured me. But there is no me, Rabbi Shimshon Refael Hirsch says. There's a very interesting thing about breakers or great crashing waves. We put out stones to break the waves, don't we? Mm-hmm. So that before they come to our shores, what has happened to them? Most of their energy has been used, and then what happens? He says, no, there's another side. Your rage was pressing on me when I noticed that all of the breaking waves of pain were doing what? You did what to them? You weakened them. You dissipated them. On the one hand, it looked like all your anger was pressing on me, way down on me. But I then noticed that you were weakening the breakers that were hitting me. They were becoming not quite as harsh. Sometimes there's horrific heartache, as well as physical pain, and it comes at us almost like in waves. Kind of washes over us in waves. You feel like you're drowning into it. And here suddenly it's becoming weaker. I can withstand this. And there comes that strange word, sella. It's a turning point. Something has changed. We don't know what it means. Radak, at one point, I don't know if he does it in this mizmor, I don't recall that he did. At one point he surmises, he takes a guess, that the word sella may come from the word silsul, which means that whoever was singing this at this point did what we call a flourish. Ha 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 ha. Okay, something at the end, and then you move to the next movement. Hirchakta miyuda'ai mimeni. You distanced all those that I knew from me. Shatani tohavot lamo. You made me into an abomination to them. Now they not only stay away, they turn their nose up at me. And that's why Rabbi Feivel Meltzer suggests that this person may be suffering from shchin. I don't know what shchin is, but apparently it's some sort of a skin disease in which you have putrid open sores that smell very badly. Kalu, I am imprisoned. Kele, bet kele, right? I'm imprisoned. Velo itse, and I can't get out. Is it within his body that he's a prisoner? Is he actually in a prison? Is he a person who is imprisoned because he's been put in quarantine? Because what he has is so contagious, hence like a leper, that he's been put away, and therefore the loneliness. Or is he imprisoned, as Rabbi Shimshon Rifail here suggests, in a ghetto with or without walls, and I will not go out of this. Eini da'ava mini oni. My eye, da'ava, is agonizing, grieving, mourning, because of my, and the word oni can mean poverty or affliction. They use the word affliction. The suffering, the torture. Kraticha Hashem b'chol yom. I called you God every day. Shitachti elecha kapi. I stretched out my hand to you, as a child would, to pick me up, right? That gesture. And now, what am I asking you? Halameitim ta'aseh pele? Will you do wonders to the dead? By the time you got it, it's almost like, I know you're going to help me, but are you going to save me when? Mm-hmm. When it's too late? Im refa'im yakumu yoducha sela? Will the, and refa'im, it says the dead. Actually, it means ghosts. Oh. Will the ghosts stand up and thank you? Ruach refa'im means the spirit of the dead. You understand? So refa'im is a short way of saying ghosts. Hayesupar, by the way, all of these are rhetorical and very sarcastic questions. Hayesupar bakever chastecha. Will we tell of your loving kindness in the grave? Emunatcha ba'avadon. Will we speak of your faith or your faithfulness, because you keep your promises, in a place where we are utterly eradicated? Ivadon la'abed. Lahashmid leharog ula'abed. When we're wiped out, will we speak of it? That's our job as Jews. Hayivada b'choshech pil'echa. In this darkness, will people know your wonder? V'tzidkatcha be'eretz nishia. And your righteousness, your justice, will it be known in a forgotten land? Okay, he's gotten all of that bitter anger out, right? We spilled it all out in front of him. And now there's a switch. V'ani. But as for me, Elecha Hashem Shivati. You see, I don't need the Ani. If I say Shivati, it's already Ani. But if I say Ve'ani, means I am different. I'm different. As for me, I plead only to you. Knowing there ain't going to come from anybody else. We can rely on no one else. And I've come to that recognition. Uba boker. And come morning. my prayer will greet you. Which means that this is being written when? In the deep, dark night, when it's just me and you. It's just me and you, God. So where is God? Imo anochi betzara, says the Medrash, and Tehillim. I am with you there in your suffering, in your pain. Lama Hashem tiznach nafshi. Why? For what? So not madua. So not what sin did I commit. What's the purpose? For what are you abandoning my soul, God? Why do you hide your face from me? Proof to me that you're here with me. Ani, ani. I am but a tortured soul, vegovea minoal, and I am expiring, dying, from the time I am youth. Which means somebody who's had a chronic illness. And Rabbi Shimshon says, you know what that illness is? I'm a Jew. I'm a Jew. I'm a Jew. Nasati eimecha. Afuna. I have carried, borne, suffered, carried it on my shoulder, your terrors. Afuna is a strange word here. We have a hard time with it. Afuna literally means, I will turn away. It's almost like a threat. You don't turn to me, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn away. I'm going to jump ship. Do you know why they torture us? We say it in Slichas. Alecha horagnu kol hayom. For you, because of you, we are killed all the day long. And all the day is our history. All the day is olam hazeh. You know that from the Seder, right? When it says that you're supposed to say Shema by day and by night, we have an argument. You're supposed to say Shema morning and night, or does it mean Ba'olam Hazeh and even La'olam Haba? You understand? Alai Avru Charonecha. Again, that word Charon, rage. All of your rages have passed over me. I've suffered them all, and I'm still breathing. Think of it as waves coming at you, one after the other. Biutecha. Biutecha are terrors, but it's usually night terrors, nightmares. Simtituni. The word simtituni is a problem. Rashi says that it would mean chopped up, and others say simtituni means when you become shriveled and dried up. Almost as if you're trying to make yourself smaller so somebody will not see you. Sabuni kamayim kol hayom. They surround me like waters. Think of it as being stuck in the ocean and trying to keep your head above water. All the day. Hikifu alai yachad. And they wrap themselves around me all at the same time, one wave after another, almost as if it were a whirlpool sucking me down. Hirchakta mimeni ohev. You have distanced from me every lover, everyone who loved me. Vereya, and every friend, meyuda'ai, those that know me, my acquaintances. Machshach. By the way, this last phrase, you distanced from me a lover, vereya, and a friend. And then there's no and. An acquaintance. Do you know who my acquaintance is? Says Yerbi Shemishim Al-Thaliyosh. You distanced from me lover and even friends. My acquaintance is darkness. Because there is no verb to be in Hebrew in present tense. Meyuda'i. The one that's my acquaintance is darkness. Now, I have to share this with you. But, this is the Breuer translation of Tehillim in Hebrew. It tells us as follows. If you will read it just as at the surface, this is the most despairing of all of the Psalms, which it is. Unless you understand where this is coming from. This Jew, from the beginning to the end, calls upon whom?
Hashem.
Not once, but twice. Yeshuati, Shivati. Did you see that? I call on you, I plead with you, you're with me. He walks through the days, and he describes this marvelous. He says, if you would see the life of the Jew amongst those who hate him, he sees the look of despising, of loathing. He knows that what he stands for is likely to bring him sooner rather than later another pogrom, another major event. He struggles through the day for parnose, and I want you to think about this in Zar lo yavin et zos, a stranger can't understand this. Can't understand this entire Psalm. And the masses of goyim, and he means even the translations of the Psalms, never got this. And they're lucky that they never knew it. And couldn't understand it. What didn't they not understand? What did we always have? During the day, a Yehudi b'chayei yomo, in his everyday life, had to struggle hard for parnose, while fighting his enemies. You don't need to go far. You don't need to go far in history to understand this. You don't have to go and say it was only in Poland, or it was only in Hungary, it was only in Czechoslovakia. It was in America. No different. He had to stand in front of mockery and disdain. And on all sides recognized that there are those that are plotting against him. We're in Golos, people. Whether we like it or not, we maybe have fancy homes, good jobs, we think they respect us. Nonsense, we're in Golos. But come evening, whatever he lived out there, he went home. He came amongst his brothers, amongst his books, to the Bes Medrash. I want you to know this is exactly the life of the Hasidic Jew in Poland, in Hungary, in the shtetl. He came home, and he was the richest of men. He came into his shul, his shtibl. His tiny little shtibl, poor as it was. And there he was in communion with his God, with his brothers who understand him and who are living through the same thing that he lives through. And through these books, he participated in a spiritual and intellectual world and could partake in a sovereignty that we once had in ancient times, that he can read them about them. And from that he drew comfort, courage, even joy in living, to continue his lifestyle, to remain true to who he is. So the night that's your friend is the end of the day, when I close the doors and I close the windows and I light the candles, and it's just me and you, God. And one would not understand this except from eyewitnesses, and I know the people think that this is all made up. It's just the fact, I'm not telling you that this was the norm, I'm telling you that it was the exception, but the exception proves the point. That if somebody could lay down on those wooden shelves inside a barrack, inside a concentration camp, and save up a little bit of margarine for weeks, so that maybe they could, in the darkness, turn on a Hanukkah light and sing a song, a nigun that they remembered from home, and from memory, maybe recite, as many did, a gemore, a chumash, something that they had. There, in that darkness, they didn't see the ugliness. They could, in their mind's eye, imagine a world that once had been, when we were really free. free to be Jews, stand up proud, tall. You understand? And live as Jews without fear. And this is what he writes about. Now, Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, you need to make understand. This is incredible. He's writing this in Frankfurt am Main, when supposedly they were at their heights. And this is how he interprets this particular mizmor. Because in the darkness, I can imagine still who I am and where I come from. And I can, while I can't see it with my eye, I can feel the hand of God. Still maintaining my my soul, still maintaining my menschlichkeit, you understand? Can still remember who we are in the final analysis. And the fact of the matter is that it happened. It's not that it happened that frequently. That it could happen at all is the power of the human spirit, even in the greatest darkness. Who is my miyudwa? Who do I know in my darkness? Who does he know? Who is his friend? The Rabbeinu Shalom. It's the Rabbeinu Shalom who is his friend. You are my friend. You hold my hand. You're with me. And therefore I am not alone. Even when I've lost everybody else, I have you. And when do I feel it most? Precisely in the darkness. Now the part that is remarkable, that I find remarkable, is that whether it was David HaMelech, whether it's Bekorach, whether it's Haman, whoever he was, but the fact of the matter is that Anshei Knesset HaGdolah had canonized this and put it into the Tanakh, no different than when they put in Job. We are not afraid. I know that there are Jews who are afraid of questioning. Supposedly we don't question God. We don't get angry at him. Nonsense.
Right.
The honesty with which one wrestles with God is how one becomes a Jew. That when Yaakov wrestles with the angel, he turns into Israel. And what does he tell him? Sarita im Elokim. Vatuchal. You struggled, you wrestled with God, and you prevailed. That's what it means to be a Jew. It's not to have it easy, it means to go through whatever it is we go through, and we come out of that limping. But by God, having known God in a way that you previously couldn't, and that's why he could say that he saw the face of God, and he didn't know that he would survive. And that's exactly what he did. They saw the face of God.